Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
One game from the playoffs and they packed JB's bags. And yes, the jokes are coming for the GOAT this time around. You know, I'd like to believe this coaching search goes well. All the names that are known aren't inspiring us at all. We have become crying Jordan in this league. I have grown tired of this meme with this team.
Sports Radio FNC, welcome into the 11 o'clock hour on the Nick Wilson Show. That is the Hack Song of the Week. Send in your grades in the Garage Door Guru text line, 704-570-9610. Or at Nick Wilson Says, that's where you can reach me personally, because I know that's what you're worried about here. There's one thing. So that is a, again, if you missed it, it is Grunshaw. Has not made his appearance on this station, the show, for a hot minute. There's a missed opportunity there in the parlance of Ron Rivera. The too heavy, too light, too black, too white, where the guy starts really riffing in it. I would have loved to hear Grunshaw on that one. But we've got another listen of the Hack Song of the Week coming up at noon, and then Hackshaw will join him for the final rendition. Join the show at 1:40. 60 minutes into the show, though. Itty bitty fitty. How's the voice holding up? Will I make it? Can we make predictions? Because I already had somebody, I think it was Max Nosewhistle, saying that he wants to do the over-under for the Mark Spain Real Estate Nick pick today on how many air biscuits you're going to rip on the show. I think over-under how many hours or how many segments my voice might last today is another very good bet we could put.
It's definitely faded like the 76ers in the postseason.
Ah, thank you. See, that's called a segue. I feel like you're learning the radio business here. I'm a proud papa. Big Daddy is proud of Little Daddy. And I get it. I get that the Sixers got bounced out of the playoffs last night. And the thing that we love to do in sports is to rush to point fingers, because it's a player-driven league, because the players have all the power. Whomever is atop the totem pole, we like to knock them down a bit. But I'm just going to tell you, I watched Miami eliminate Philadelphia in six games, of which Joel Embiid only played the last four, of which he played with a broken face and a broken finger. And as I was watching last night, in a game in Philly, which they lost by 9 points, I still can't believe Miami was the dog in that game. They were a 2.5-point dog going into that game. Cannot believe it. But in which Joel Embiid scored 20 points, had 7 of 24 shooting from the field, and went 2 of 8 from 3. And judging how Miami, the way they threw bodies at him, including one of the best defenders in the NBA, Bam Adebayo, I don't know what people expect from Joel Embiid. Tobias Harris went 6 of 13. Tyrese Maxey, who's a really nice young player, 9 of 22. James Harden took 9 shots in that game. In the second half of that game, Miami was just throwing bodies and people and schemes at Joel Embiid to confuse him, to slow him down, to frustrate him. They did everything short of punching him in the face, which is what they did in the previous game. This was not about Joel Embiid not getting the job done. This is about the 76ers' continued failure to get the job done around Joel Embiid. And I thought it was interesting. Joel Embiid gave an honest answer. He was asked about the Sixers' performance around him, including James Harden, and I thought he gave an honest answer.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I think he's been, obviously, I'm sure, you know, since we got him, everybody expected the Houston James Harden, but that's not who he is anymore. He's more of a playmaker. I thought, you know, yeah, at times, you know, could have been, as all of us, could have been more aggressive. All of us, whether it's Tyrese or Tobias or, you know, guys coming off the bench.
I don't have a problem. Everybody heard that as Joel Embiid throwing the other Sixers under the bus. One, they deserve to be thrown under the bus. Because if Miami's going to focus all of their defensive intensity on the show, Joel Embiid, you better damn sure do better than 6 of 13 for 14 points for Tobias Harris. And this is, I think we can just, this isn't about James Harden's skill has eroded. It's not that the NBA has completely changed the embellishment rules. James Harden got to the free throw line no times last night. He drew no fouls, and he turned the ball over four times. I think what we really have to start saying is, does James Harden still want to play in the NBA, or does James Harden want to live the NBA lifestyle? I hate this. It's like when Kevin Durant went from being the backpack-wearing, just sweet, unknowing Kevin Durant in OKC to being the chotch that was the snake of the Golden State Warriors. I hated to see it because young Kevin Durant was one of my favorite players in the NBA. He absolutely was the antithesis to the superstar, the big money, the big living kind of guys in OKC. And then he went to Golden State and he became, you know, mayor of Chotch City. I think James Harden is a lot more of a chotch than even Kevin Durant was in Golden State. At some point, and listen, again, James Harden wasn't a plucky upstart second-round pick. He was at, what, I think he was the fifth pick in the draft, top three pick in the NBA draft. So he was a lotto baby. But James Harden, in OKC, accepted a role that a lot of young guys wouldn't want to accept, which was he ran the offense off the bench and was a phenomenal third contributor. He took the backseat to KD and Russell Westbrook a lot. And then, when he kind of wanted to get paid, he went to Houston. And there were times, guys, where James Harden took over the court for Houston and took those Houston teams farther than they probably should have been given the surrounding talent of the Eric Gordons, the Dwight Howards, and stuff like that. But at some point in Houston, James Harden became about the lifestyle of the NBA and not about playing. So as we sit here, what is it, 3 months? T-minus 3 months from the 76ers-Nets conundrum. Let's just say this. Neither the Nets or the 76ers are winners. Everybody's a loser because you basically just swapped one diva who doesn't want to play basketball but wants $40 million a year for another. If anything, the Nets won because Seth Curry, the ancillary pieces that went from Philadelphia to Brooklyn were better than the ancillary pieces that went back to Philly with James Harden. And I'm just going to tell you right now, this is going to be a hot take. Don't pay James Harden. We are T-minus $200 million contract away from fat James Harden showing up, and that contract will be an absolute albatross in the NBA. James Harden had a legacy-saving moment. It was at his feet last night, and he pooped the bed. It was disheartening to watch as a guy who used to love James Harden. And to Joel Embiid, I had no problem with what he said. He also took a passive-aggressive shot or two at Daryl Morey for that trade and for the way they've done. And something I said earlier in this series, after Joel Embiid got criticism for Game 4, I truly think Joel Embiid, I eagerly await any of these national so-called pundits who come out today and have the balls to say Joel Embiid should demand a trade. Because if Joel Embiid played in Milwaukee, if Joel Embiid played in San Antonio, if Joel Embiid played in Charlotte, And they had reached the kind of ceiling where every year Philadelphia is trying to do something different to get over the hump. Put the kind of resources into building a winner around Joel Embiid, the trade for Jimmy Butler, the trade for Tobias Harris, the Ben Simmons for Harden deal. Any other organization, small market organization in the NBA did that, and Joel Embiid just got bounced out by a good, really good Miami team. But Joel Embiid taking the kind of criticism that he's taking right now, he wouldn't be taking that criticism. Instead, the narrative would be why Joel Embiid needs to get out of Charlotte. That I need that same energy for Philadelphia. Daryl Morey is a lot smarter from a basketball perspective than I am. Doc Rivers has an NBA title. I do not. This ain't about that. This is about 5 years. In fact, 6 years that Joel Embiid's been on the court in Philadelphia, and they have done nothing but waste his prime. And at 28 years old, only being able to play 64 games a year because the old previous injury, you know, workload issues that he have, Joel Embiid should ask out of Philadelphia. I don't know where he should go. I mean, granted, I'd love to have Joel Embiid here. I'd make a Joel Embiid for Gordon Hayward trade. Don't tempt me with a good time. Don't threaten me with a little bit of trade porn from the ESPN NBA trade machine. But he should ask out. He doesn't have 10 years left in his career. And ironically, he should do what James Harden should have read the tea leaves in Houston and realized that organization, that they were capitulating him too much, and they didn't do a good enough job of building a potential title contender, wooing a LeBron, wooing a KD, and building a title contender in Houston. James Harden wasted his prime with a mid-organization in Houston. That's all Philadelphia is. They're just in a bigger market. In the meantime, we also saw the Mavs push it to 7 games with the Suns. Can I just tell you this? Everything that I said yesterday, if you didn't hear any of it, the Nick Wilson Show podcast up on WFNZ.com. You can also rate and subscribe and follow the show, The Nick Wilson Show, on Spotify and everywhere else you can find podcasts. Be kind with that rate, by the way. But everything that I said about watching Giannis dominate and watching Boston, who's a great defensive team, have no answers for Giannis Antetokounmpo, a 7-foot-1 monster. I think you can say that about watching Luka Doncic. And don't look at the box score last night. Luka just has moments where even though he is not the athlete that Giannis is, the skills are otherworldly. But he just has moments where he does transformative things against a great defensive team. I still don't think the Mavericks are winning this itty-bitty-fitty, but Luka Doncic is the reason why this is going 7 games.
You go back to when I first started here, late September, early October. I expressed my non-liking of one Luka Doncic. That's gone.
You got to walk it back, don't you?
I had to apologize to Hubert Davis on my podcast yesterday. Now I have to apologize to Luka. He's finally winning in the postseason. He's unguardable. They ISO'd him on the left side of the court last night against Chris Paul, who's a great one-on-one defender. And he backed him down, turned around, and hit a fadeaway three-point shot. What the hell are we doing? That's not fair.
They've got Bridges, one of the best wing defenders in the NBA. Didn't do anything last night. I mean, maybe slowed him down a little bit, but didn't stop him. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Cam Johnson. Look at the bodies that they have to throw at him. And it doesn't matter.
I hope in game 7 he shows up. Because he's 0-2 in elimination games, but he's put up historic performances. I hope he puts up one on Sunday.
Everything that I just said about Joel Embiid, we're not too far off that having the same conversation with Luka Doncic, by the way. They need to get another superstar with him. If they added a Kyrie, if they added a KD, right? I don't think either one of those guys is getting traded. If they added a player of that caliber this offseason, with the way Lucas played the last two postseasons, they would vault to top of my potential title contenders.
Maybe when Mike D'Antoni takes over the Hornets and he's the front office GM as well, he just trades for Embiid and Luka, and we have a 6-man roster, but we have him and LaMelo, those three guys and LaMelo on the team.
Joel Embiid, What would you give to get Joel Embiid here? I realize the risk of his injuries. I would give it all. Everything not named LaMelo. You want Hugo? You get Hugo. Right? You want the Panthers social media team who dominated the schedule release again? Sorry, you're going to have to move to Philadelphia and deal with the O's Yuck Yucks. And a new name has entered the chat for the Hornets coaching search. Next on Sports Radio FNZ. Sports Radio FNZ, it is the Nick Wilson Show. Jonathan Alexander, Panthers beat reporter from the Charlotte Observer, will pick his brain on the Sean Payton to Carolina rumors. Another Dave Tepper bromance. Hey, Sean, I got $20 million if you want to come down here to Charlotte. We'll go ahead and give you the old whatever you want. You got to get us Kyler Murray, though. It's Big Daddy Tap. I know, he's starting to sound like Chucky from Boston who called the other day. In the meantime, while we got to talk about the Sean Payton rumor again multiple times in today's show, Chevin and Tubb had put in a Luka gif in my mentions, and Nick Wilson said, Luka's a great player, but I'll be damned if I don't want to punch him in the face when he does that smug smirk smile. A lot of alliteration there at the end. Yeah, Luka, I felt this way about Trae Young. Luka's going to be one of those guys that people love to hate in the NBA. We've had an era of guys, you know, LeBron for a long time before the decision was a guy people loved. I don't know Kobe. I feel like Kobe was comfortable being a heel. But like there was an era, you know, guys that you root for because we think they're good guys. Luka and Trae Young both have a chotch factor that I think the more we see them in the playoffs, people are going to hate them. What eventually became how people talk about LeBron, not you, Phil Jackson. But Luka's got a punchable face. I can admit that. And somebody loves him. But well, we were just talking about the NBA playoffs. A new name has entered the chat for the Hornets coaching job. As fresh off of joining our show yesterday, Jake Fisher was on Twitter. Jake_Fisher. That is where you can find this tweet. And said that former Lakers head coach Frank Vogel has also interviewed for the Charlotte Hornets head coaching job. We've reached critical mass on meh factor. Because they also went on to say that the Hornets are trying to finish off their round one interviews. And it's not that I don't like Frank Vogel as a head coach. I think the bar should be a little bit higher here on guys who aren't objectionable. Right? Mike D'Antoni, if he's just the head coach, is not the most objectionable hire they could make. That's Mark Jackson. That dude's a fraud. Do not hire Mark Jackson. Frank Vogel won an NBA title. I think that would matter in the cachet of the Hornets locker room. And more importantly, I thought Frank was a good, maybe not great, but good head coach in Indiana as well. But it doesn't feel like right now we're on the trajectory of just don't drive this thing into the ditch. None of these, and let me put it this way. Has there been any coach that you've heard that you think is definitively better than James Borrego as a coach? Because this is where I struggle with. I don't think Mike D'Antoni, I don't care that Mike D'Antoni's been to the conference finals. Mike D'Antoni's had James Harden, Chris Paul, Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire, Carmelo Anthony. He should have been to the conference finals in that scenario. If anything, everything people say about Doc Rivers is what I say about Mike D'Antoni. He's had a lot of talent, hadn't done diddly squat with it. Itty bitty?
This might be a hot take, so be ready.
I love those.
A potential hiring of Frank Vogel would be worse than hiring Mike D'Antoni.
Ooh. Show your work, please.
It doesn't make sense. The way he wants to play the game doesn't match the way the Hornets are built. And
you're talking about playing in the half court more.
Yes.
Here's what I struggle with that take. Shouldn't we expect a head coach in 2022, like 20 years ago, you had to adapt to Don Nelson's style of play. 20 years ago, you had to adapt to Mike Fratello's style of play. But, like, one of the greatest coaches of all time is Pat Riley. In the era of you've got to adapt to him, the only thing you had to adapt to with Pat Riley was you better play hard. Look at the teams, look at the Showtime Lakers and how they played basketball and compare them with how the New York Knicks played in the early 90s under Pat.
Yep.
They're completely different. What I mean, I'm not saying the Lakers were finesse, but
they were finesse.
You compare that to, I mean, it was Oakley, it was Ewing, it was John Starks. It was dudes who would just bust you in the mouth for Anthony Mason. Dudes who would just bust you in the mouth to bust you in the mouth. That's the one instance of a coach in that era conforming and fitting to his players. Now, you don't have a future in the NBA if you can't adapt to your roster. I would be shocked if Frank Vogel came here, saw LaMelo, and said, "Yeah, we're going to play in the half court."
He won a title. Now, granted, the Lakers were built differently where they were constructed to play in the half court, and they should have been the defensive juggernaut that they were. He would be a great assistant to a Mike D'Antoni as the head coach. It would not make sense. It would not work out.
What if they hire a meh head coach and then three meh head coaches as assistants? How much meh can we get on the Hornets bench?
That would make a great coaching lineup, kind of like what Matt Rhule has assembled with the Panthers, where it's a bunch of meh former head coaches as assistants.
Old vet saying, "I can't wait for your first interview with Mark Jackson." The first question will be, "Where are the prostitutes?"
Ask him for me, not for yourself, though.
Yeah, no. Our board op wants to know where are the prostitutes, Mark? There just haven't been. Somebody saying 704 number saying on the Garage Door Guru text line, "Cold reality, no big time coaches coming to a small market team with a cheapskate meddling owner." And that's from Tom in Charlotte. Sorry, Tom, I didn't see your name till the end. I mean, I think there's a part of this. Yesterday, when Jake Fisher was on this show, Jake admitted that the Panthers might have to get a little desperate. They might have to stoop to a level of desperation to get a player, a meh coach like Mike D'Antoni here.
So maybe that's what they would have to do in order to convince someone like that or Mike D'Antoni to come to that situation that's purportedly, you know, uncertain and in flux. So that's the only thought I have on that front. But, you know, D'Antoni, I think, is definitely looking for another job.
This is... I am still optimistic about the coaching search because, one, we have not officially rounded down all the round one interviews. I think the Hornets have waited on a couple of guys in the NBA to see where their future is. Quinn Snyder and then Doc Rivers in Philadelphia. Those are the only two guys that I think I can celebrate if they hire them. I'm not saying, by the way, I'm not saying that I won't like a Darvin Ham hire. The Hornets can't just hire a coach that is an acceptable hire. The Hornets need to, for the way that they handled Borrego, the Hornets need to make a hire that isn't laughed at in the NBA. When we had Jake Fisher on yesterday, I asked him, like, if they fire Borrego because of the offense, because of the defense, and then they turn around and hire a guy who's allergic to defense in the 8 seconds or less, Mike D'Antoni, how is that going to be received? And I had said I thought it was going to be laughed at, and he kind of said that, yeah, it would be met with a lot of skepticism. And if you have to make that guy the president of basketball operations to do it, a role that has failed in the NBA, it has. In the last 20 years, it's Greg Popovich. Doc Rivers is a good NBA head coach. He failed at that role in L.A., an old assistant had to take over for him as GM. The Hornets need to, and the reason why it matters isn't so that you and I feel good about it. It's not. It's so that around the NBA, going into the next couple years of LaMelo Ball, this hire or the decision to fire Borrego and who they hire doesn't hold back the Hornets in the eyes of the rest of the NBA. Here, you and I see the Hornets as a team that isn't the same old Hornets. Because LaMelo is better earlier than any player we've had in 20 years. Here in Charlotte, we see Mitch Kupchak as a trusted GM, as we should. Around the NBA guys, he's an old, old man who was a do-boy for the Buss family for 20 years. We know he's not that. But the reason why I made my points about Joel Embiid should ask out of Philadelphia is because we're not too far away. If we haven't already started, we're not too far away from people starting the pressure of LaMelo should ask out of Charlotte. Because that's how they treat small market teams. And Michael Jordan has to prove to this organization, to this locker room, to the rest of the NBA, he's worthy of a player of LaMelo Ball's talent. This coaching search and how they do it. Mike D'Antoni is a head coach. Meh. Mike D'Antoni is president of basketball operations is disastrous. While we're on the subject of Doc Rivers, and yes, for everybody trying to put it on Doc Rivers stepped into a messy marriage between Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, which hadn't worked for a really long time. And then halfway through his time in Philadelphia, he had Joel Embiid and James Harden. James Harden, who was washed. So it's laughable to me that Doc Rivers is taking heat in Philadelphia. That situation was screwed from Jump Street. They're not losing in the second round because of Doc Rivers. But maybe the funniest thing I've heard is the Philly media yesterday asking Doc Rivers about whether he feels confident about his future in the coaching job he's doing right now in Philly.
I don't worry about my job, Howard. I think I do a terrific job, and if you don't, then you should write it, because I worked my butt off to get this team here. When I first got here, no one picked us to be anywhere. And again this year, the same thing. So if that's how anyone feels, write it, and I'm going to feel secure about it.
It's a results-based business.
It is, but you don't do it every year. Every time you're wrong, should you lose your job? No. So it's the same thing, all right? But listen, if you believe that, then go with it. I know what I did this year, and I feel very good about that.
There's a real part of me that wants Doc Rivers here, not just because I think he's a good head coach, but because the weekly interview with Doc Rivers would be must-listen radio. Right? Borrego was the master of, I'd ask him a hard question, and Borrego would just find a way to spin it into a positive or just completely not answer my question. Doc Rivers would be like, I would ask him a question like, you know, how do we think LaMelo's developing? Well, how do you think he's developing? You say what you want about his development, but I think I'm doing a great job developing LaMelo. Doc Rivers would be the most fun coach we've had to quote since, I was going to say Seifert, that's probably not fair.
Larry Brown.
Oh, really good submission. Yeah, I want Doc Rivers here because, one, he's the best coach that could potentially be here, not named Quinn Snyder. Two, he's a walking, talking press conference quote. We would talk twice the amount of Hornets if Doc Rivers every 5 days was blowing up Rod Boone, was blowing up Kunkel.
Willie P, man, he'd end them.
Oh my God. Willie P versus Doc Rivers. Willie P style freestyling on Doc Rivers. That might end up just being the whole show. I might just welcome them both into studio and just play them off each other and just allow them to fight.
We play Say Less with the Panthers. We'd play Say More with the Hornets if Doc Rivers became the head coach.
Or at some point, we might actually be begging Doc Rivers to say less. Let's go to it. Is Frank Vogel a better hire than James Borrego as a head coach? Mike D'Antoni, is that a better hire than James Borrego? And would you like the idea? If Doc does become available, I think he would go to Lakers if he did. But would you be happy if Doc Rivers became available and the Hornets made a run at him? I'd rather that as president of basketball operations than Mike friggin' D'Antoni. Jalen Alexander, Panthers beat reporter for the Charlotte Observer, next on Sports Radio FNC. Sports Radio FNC, welcome back to the Nick Wilson Show. Happy Friday. I don't think we've said it enough. Happy Friday. Another rendition of the Hack Song of the Week coming up in 20 minutes. Grunge Saw makes his triumphant, or has made his triumphant return to the Charlotte airwaves. I still can speak. We got 2.5 hours to go. Who the hell knows if I'll make it through the next, or whether it's going to be the itty-bitty-fitty show for the final hour of the show. Are you the reason why my voice is going to hell? Is that, have you been planning this all week?
I mean, look, have I planted some things in your coffee while you've walked out of the studio? I can't confirm or deny.
Have you just been like putting like a bag of pollen in the vents here to make sure that I get dried out and all allergied up over here?
I mean, I would never do that to you. It is my fault. Because I've noticed a change in your voice after our pre-Jason Kidd show argument yesterday.
That's true.
It's been all downhill for you since.
Jason Kidd, and whether he's a top 5 or top 20 all-time point guard, has divided the show. But we can be better. We will be better. So more to get to. But the big thing, the big news, the big whispers. We got many camps going on right now for the Carolina Panthers. Rookie mini camps. Matt Corral's already been spotted. The Golden Corral has already been spotted at the Panthers' facilities. Also, Panthers' schedule came out yesterday. And oh, by the way, Eric Spanberg reporting the Panthers have interest in Sean Payton to be their next head coach. So much to talk about on that front, but we can't do it without our next guest. You know him from the Charlotte Observer, Panthers beat reporter on the guest line. It is the always affable Jonathan Alexander. What's up, buddy? Welcome to the show.
Not too much. How's it going?
First off, is Jason Kidd a top 5 point guard of all time?
I think so. He's definitely one of my favorites. Do other people have different opinions? I can't imagine.
I have put him outside the top 5, but I still think he's top 20.
Top 20? Wow.
I think somebody put it on the text line really, really well earlier this week. They said top 5 was a no for them, but top 10, obviously, he's in that. That's where he probably belongs.
Yeah, 100% top 10. I mean, his ability to rebound, assist, got to the NBA Finals, what, twice? Well, no, won Finals, got to the Finals another time. He's a winner. Definitely top 10 in my book.
So I have two choices here. I either move on to the Panthers content or you and I start screaming at each other. So let's move on to the Panthers content here. So let's start with the Sean Payton rumors. How much stock do you put into this rumor in May 12th? Well, it was yesterday. It was May 12th. But May 12th that the Panthers have interest in Sean Payton?
Yeah, I don't put much stock into it, just given the fact that a lot would have to happen for the Panthers to even do that. First, like, you know, I guess the team spokesperson said in the story, that would in a way be tampering. They aren't allowed to approach Sean Payton. He's under contract with the Saints till 2024. But a lot would have to happen for that to even occur for the Panthers to get a trade for Sean Payton. I mean, they would have to give him a ton of a lot. And then the Saints ultimately are the Bears. Do they want to trade Sean Payton to a division rival? That's not done. Teams rarely trade within their division for players. And the Saints and the Panthers have a heated rivalry. I tweeted, the Saints didn't even want the Panthers to get Tommy Stevens. So I can't see it happening. Now, I think anybody would be interested if they decided, you know, Matt Rhule wasn't the answer later on. I think anybody would be interested in Sean Payton, but whether it's realistic or whether it has any legs to it, I don't think so.
Jonathan Alexander of the Charlotte Observer, Panthers beat reporter on the Technicom hotline. So let's then move to the schedule here. The schedule released over the last 5 days, but in reality, it was officially released last night. So looking at the Panthers, and let's keep Matt Rhule's future in mind here. How do you think this schedule sets up for a coach that many people expect to be on the hot seat throughout the entirety of the season unless there are immediate results early on for the Panthers?
Yeah, it's a tough one, especially during that middle stretch. I think we're going to know a lot about the Panthers by week 9. Between weeks 4 and 9, they played 5 teams who were in the 2021 playoffs, including both Super Bowl teams. The Panthers could be a team with a losing record by week 9, and that would not look favorable upon Matt Rhule unless the Panthers were in tight games and you felt like they were capable of winning those. Because it does get a little easier at the end of the schedule. So if the Panthers are in the playoff hunt or close to the playoff hunt with the easier part of the schedule later on, then I think, you know, they're good. But it definitely could go ugly if the Panthers you know, don't have their quarterback situation figured out. I think that's the biggest piece right now.
Jonathan, patient Dave Tepper came out right before the draft, and he gave Matt Rhule credit for staff changes, for, you know, some of the personal changes he's made here. How do what Matt Rhule, the sacrifices Matt Rhule made, the staff changes, all that, do you think that buys Matt Rhule a full 18 weeks? Is it gonna have to be week by week? This is a talking point, and Matt Rhule's seat at the beginning of the season starts out as hot.
No, I don't think it buys him a full 18 weeks. I think you know, what David Tepper was saying was that he was impressed with the progress that the Panthers have made, or the steps that Matt Rhule has taken to that progress, and that starts by hiring veteran coaches who have a history of you know, developing talent. But I fully think, you know, if the Panthers, you know, start out, 2-7 or whatever, or with a terrible losing record, you know, Matt Rhule definitely is on the hot seat, so that would not look favorable upon him. I would be hard to me imagine with a losing record like that, he would, you know, last very long. So I think, you know, that first 9 games would be a true barometer, I think. It'll determine where he is.
Jonathan, rookie mini camps coming up right now, today. Looking at Matt Corral versus Sam Darnold, including all the other opportunities to upgrade the quarterback position, who is the best bet to start week one for the Carolina Panthers at quarterback?
I think as of right now, unless a trade were to happen, and I can't speak until a trade happens, right now it's setting up for Sam Darnold. It's Sam Darnold's job right now to lose. You know, Matt Rhule went on a record to say, you know, ideally they would like to have Matt Corral, ease into the job. They don't want to rush him into the job. And I think that, you know, before Christian McCaffrey got hurt, Sam Darnold was playing fairly well. So I think they kind of believe that they can fix some of his – there's a belief that they can fix some of his mechanical issues, and with a full team he can play better and buy them time to allow Matt Corral to sit. So I think week one is set up for Sam Darnold. Now, will Sam Darnold be the starter by week 17? I don't see that happening, just based on what I've seen in with the years worth of Sam Darnold plan, but that's just my opinion. But it definitely could change if the Panthers decide they want to, you know, make a trade for one of those veteran quarterbacks.
You mentioned the two names there, Baker or Jimmy G. So if I put two teams, the exact same team with a different quarterback at the helm, how many wins does Baker or Jimmy G get you versus the Sam Darnold-led Carolina Panthers this year?
Yeah, I think the proof is in the pudding. I think both players are better or have shown that they are better than Sam Darnold. I think the way the team is set up with a good quarterback, you know, I think that they're easily a 8 or 9 win team. I think the potential to be even a little bit better. But I think the offensive line has been fixed tremendously. I think the defense will take a little bit of a hit without the pass rusher and Hassan Reddick. They have to figure that out. I think their secondary is better, though. So I think they've made a lot of improvements that will lend them to win more than 5 games. But quarterback is key, and I think with Jimmy G and Baker, I think they're both in similar in talent in the way I view them. I think they're around a 9-win team next year if they have one of those quarterbacks.
All right, Jonathan, let's end on rookie minicamps here. Outside of Matt Corral and Ikem Ekwonu, what are some names to watch for Panthers fans coming out of Panthers rookie minicamp?
Yeah, I think Brandon Smith, for sure, the 4th-round pick. A lot of people thought he was, taken lower than what he was projected to go. Linebacker, who I think will be a contributor early on in special teams. And maybe even get some run over there at a linebacker. And I also think Ryan Switzer, who was a surprise tryout guy who, you know, first got on the Panthers radar when he was catching balls from Sam Howell. I think the Miami wide receiver, Rambo, who set single season records at Miami in his lone season there, is an undrafted rookie and a guy to watch. So I think those guys in particular, those three guys in particular, stand out for me.
Follow this man on the Twitters right now at John M. Alexander. And again, check out all the Panthers coverage from minicamp, the schedule, of the draft content that's come out since the draft on the Charlotte Observer website there. And of course, the newspaper, the Charlotte Observer. Jonathan, you're the man. I appreciate you joining us on a Friday. Have a great weekend, buddy.
Thanks, man. You too.
Thank you so much. I think he was joining us from a menagerie. I heard people in the background. I might have heard a lion roar. There were some birds. I think he might just be enjoying the weather. I know it was rainy when I was out there, but I heard somebody say we're going to get more of that weather we got the last couple days. That's what my hopes are for this weekend. That in good resolution in the NBA playoffs. We talked with Jonathan Alexander about Sean Payton. So we'll ask. I got a big question about Sean Payton. What is the most you would want to see the Panthers give up if they did chase Sean Payton after the season? We'll also listen to the second to last rendition of the Hacksong of the Week on Sports Radio FNC.